This is Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. San Jose, California native Shannon Liu is my guest today. Shannon is a world-class dizzy player. A dizzy is a bamboo flute. World-class is no hyperbole here, as she is the winner of a gold medal in the 2021 Song Ting Long Yin National Bamboo Flute Competition in China and has performed at Carnegie Hall. Currently, she is a senior cognitive science major and music performance minor at Carleton College and has been a member of the Carleton Chinese Music Ensemble for the past 3 years. It's time to learn more from this talented young woman herself. Let's talk with Shannon Liu. Hi, Shannon. Welcome to Musician Talk.
Hi.
I'm very happy to have you here.
Yeah, very happy to be here.
Have you had a chance to enjoy this weather?
Yes.
Good. Did you get outside yesterday?
Yeah, it was really great.
Today will be too. So first I have to say, I asked you how to pronounce your last name, but I did not look up how to pronounce your instrument, and I absolutely botched it on the intro. It's not a dizzy hello. Of course not. How do you say the name of the flute?
Yeah, it's called Dizi.
Dizi. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll probably get that wrong again at some point in time during this interview, but the Dizi, that's awesome. All right, so let's start with your musical journey. If you could take us through step by step, when you started to play, and take us up to now being at Carleton College.
Yeah, so I first started doing music when I was 5. I learned piano first, and then at about 3rd grade, I was in a language immersion program, and they started an after-school program. And the first music thing that they did was the Dizi. And so I started learning at 3rd grade, and I really enjoyed it. I just went from there, pretty much. I was studying under a very talented teacher called Gao Jun. And I worked under him for about, until sophomore, junior year of high school. And recently I've been working with my new teacher, Yu Xiaoqing. And they were both from China and studied at the conservatories, and they're both super talented. And after starting to learn Dizi, I really enjoy playing wind instruments, and I also started playing some flute, so I can join the middle and high school band and just get a little bit more ensemble experience in. And pretty much I've been focusing on the Chinese music aspect, though, in college. I was very lucky to have found Gao Hong while I was looking at colleges, and she was one of the primary reasons why I decided to come to Carleton. And when I came here, she offered me so many opportunities to perform, and it just helped me grow a lot as a musician, much more than just practicing and doing some level tests.
Well, I imagine as you're growing up and you start in 3rd grade, that through elementary school and middle school and high school, that there's no music for West or Eastern instrument. And so I'm glad that you picked up the flute, so you're able to at least play with bands. Did you find any opportunities to play when you were younger in, with Chinese groups or any other group out in California?
Yeah, we actually had a Chinese youth ensemble in my area. We had a pretty big Asian community, so all of us had a lot of people to work with, and I played with a group of at least 5 to 6 Dizi players, and they are all very good, and many of them still keep on playing now, I'm pretty sure. I have not been keeping in contact with them, but
sure.
Yeah.
That's great that you had that opportunity. You might not have had that if you weren't on the West Coast. And you had a wonderful teacher. Your first teacher, you said, was a really great player. And that just happened, he happened to be close enough to be able to give you lessons?
Yeah, he just happened to be there.
Wow.
And they asked him to be the teacher for our language immersion program. And so that's how I met him.
Okay, that sounds like serendipity. Like, that was supposed to happen.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Like, he was placed in your path for this reason, because you are such a gifted player. And that's really, really great. So tell me a little bit about your household, music in your household growing up.
Yeah. So both my parents, they have dabbled in music. My grandma is a music teacher, but none of them really play professionally. I think that, like, the childhood that they had with music in their lives, like, they really enjoyed it. And so they also thought that my brother and I should also have that in our lives. And just, it teaches you really important skills, teaches discipline, and just enjoying art, which is also really important.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so in your household, what kind of music did you listen to? Did you listen to groups that played the Dietz? I mean, were you familiar with it as you grew up listening to it in your household too?
We actually didn't. So my dad is a big fan of classical music. So we listened to all the famous classical music pieces at home, and we listened to it on the car. We almost never listened to radio. So lots of Mozart and Beethoven.
How do you think that influenced your playing? Even though it does, they don't have your instrument when, you know, in the orchestra that you're listening to.
Yeah, I think I was able to get a lot of the strict sense of like rhythm and all of that. Is more popular in European countries, and I think it helped me build my foundation very well. And because Chinese music is a little bit more free flowing. As I got older and did more of it, I was able to use the foundation and, like, extrapolate from it a little bit more. I think if I just went from the get-go and did a lot of, like, the more free tempo-style music, I would have a lot of trouble going back into, like, a more structured
piece.
Yeah.
So when you say free-flowing, what does that mean? Does it mean improv, or what does the music look like for something that's free-flowing?
Yeah, so in a lot of Chinese music, what happens is they'll have about, like, the first 4 or 5 lines of the piece, and they have, like, a melody written out with some kind of, like, rhythm, but it's very, very flexible, so it goes up to interpretation. It's a little bit similar to the idea of, like, folk stories passed down. So a lot of the time it would be your teacher will play it in a certain way and you will mimic them. And so based on how a performer plays, you can kind of tell, like, who their teacher was and, like, what area they're from. And that plays a really big role in just, like, how the music is conveyed.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. So you would learn it the way your teacher plays it, and once you become proficient, then do you take off from there and create your own way to play it?
Yeah. So I actually have recordings of different pieces where I learned from my teacher, Gao Jun, and then my other teacher, Yu Xiaoqing, and then you can hear, like, especially in the free-flowing part, you call it the shadow. There's a lot of very, very different ornamentations and, like, speed and, like, rubatos and stuff put into it.
It kind of sounds a little bit like jazz. You know, with jazz, you have a real book, you have the melody line, and then some rhythm is there, but you take that and you go from it. You take off from there. That's really cool. Thank you for that. So now that was a little bit of a tutorial on the music that you play, but I would also like you to give us a tutorial on your instrument. And it's very fascinating that there's different sizes that play different scales and all that. So why don't you go ahead and just let us know something about your instrument, the Dietz.
Yeah. So it is based off of, like, a 8-tone scale, so I can play all of the whole notes, and the notes that are harder to play are anything with sharps or flats. You would need to cover half of the whole to be able to do that, so it takes a little bit of technique. Normally, you don't really learn it until you get to, like, the higher levels of Dietz playing. And another thing that you really want to notice is that there is an extra hole in between, like, the blowhole and the finger holes. And you actually put a plant membrane on it.
A what? Sorry.
You put a plant membrane on it. It's called the dimo. And it produces this really characteristic sound of the Dietz, that kind of, like, nasally bright sound that comes from it that you can't get from a flute.
And so... Excuse me. And so that membrane stays there. You don't put your finger over it or anything. That's it. The membrane just stays there while you play.
The membrane stays there.
And so how many different ditsas do you play?
So I have about 15, I think.
Wow. And are they all different?
Yeah, they're all of different sizes. So basically any note on the scale, they probably have a ditsa for. So there's like C, D, E, and everything up to there. Sometimes there's also like B flat. There's a lot of different ones. And you would play depending on the scale.
Of the song that you're playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, that is fascinating. Do you ever switch in the middle of a song? Do you ever have, you know, modulation and then have to pick up a different instrument?
So you don't really do that in solo playing, but you do it in ensemble playing because there are a few pieces where you will change the fingering to modulate, but it has to be a scale that's compatible with the scale that you're playing the flute on. If it's not, then you have to switch flutes, and so that's more likely to happen in ensemble.
Okay. Wow. That is fascinating. So you have on the piano the 12-note chromatic scale that's all half steps, and they're all the same distance apart. Mm-hmm. And you're saying this is an 8-note instrument, and so those are not all evenly spaced or evenly toned.
So it can pretty much be matched to the 12 chromatic scale.
Okay.
I think there's slightly different tuning differences. So sometimes like my flute will be a little bit higher than pianos and stuff like that, just because everything's fixed. So the holes are all drilled in a specific position. So it's never going to be able to be changed, right?
Right.
So you have to adjust for that. But overall, the notes are pretty similar, I would say.
And do you control some of that? Is it some of that being in tune controlled by your mouth?
Yeah. So we actually have two kinds. So we have a kind that you can like separate. So those are like the ensemble flutes. It's kind of like a normal flute where you would pull out the head joint and push it back to adjust for tuning. But then the better performance flutes, they are usually one piece. And so in flute, normally you can adjust with like airflow. You can adjust just by tilting it a little bit up or down. And that's normally how I deal with it because the difference is pretty small.
Wow.
So it's adjustable.
You are an amazing player. I mean, technically so proficient doesn't quite cover it. You're also a very emotional player, I find, when I listen to their pieces. So let's talk about this first piece called Oasis. Why did you pick this song to play today?
So this is a piece that I was really proud of performing. It is one of the hardest pieces I've ever played. It has a really difficult technique called circular breathing and double tonguing at the same time. And those techniques individually are very difficult to do well. And I worked a lot struggling to just like get that. There's a section where I think I played it as well as I think I can at this moment. And like, I remember when I played it, I just felt like a sense of relief and like joy that I like messed up a little bit after that. But I think it was just like a super great experience to play this piece. And I really wanted to share it with other people.
So describe circular breathing.
So circular breathing is basically, when you're still playing, but you're going to be breathing through your nose at the same time while you blow. So you're inhaling and exhaling at the same time.
That's amazing.
Essentially.
And you have to do that. Why?
So it's kind of for musical continuity, especially for wind instruments, you would be breathing in the middle and, if you breathe, you kind of like break the flow of the music a little bit, right? And normally, like, if you breathe fast, it's fine. But I think for the Chinese music, sometimes they're very particular and they want to get a very specific feeling. And circular breathing is one way to get that, where you can have a super good flow. And you can also, it's also a way for performers to show off,
sure.
Essentially.
Right.
If you watch different, like, great performers, a lot of them, they will sneak in some circular breathing and add in super long notes just to show that they can do it.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So your phrasing can be almost, I mean, if you can circular breathe the whole song, your phrase, the phrase could be the complete song.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's no rests, right? I mean,
yeah.
It would just, right. Oh, that's really cool. So you spoke some of the challenges with this piece is learning to, yeah, to circular breathe and double tongue. Is that what you said
mm-hmm.
too?
Yeah.
And why don't you explain that too, what that is?
So the reason why it's so difficult is because you're tonguing, so it kind of breaks the airflow while you are playing at the same time. And normally for long notes, it's a little bit easier because you're not doing anything with your tongue. You're just blowing.
Yep.
So you can focus on breathing. But when you're doing double tonguing, you have to make sure like you're even and like you're getting the articulation through. And so just being able to focus on that is a little bit difficult. And then if you add on circular breathing, it's crazy.
I don't know how you could do that. How could... Because you're stopping the flow with your tongue.
Yeah.
Even though you want the flow to be continuous. That is amazing. Let's see. So when did you do this piece? And where was it? Where was it recorded?
Yeah, so I did this piece last May in Crackham Hall at Carleton College.
Okay.
So I was accompanied by the very talented Helen Jin Lee, who's also a Carleton student. She's amazing. I asked her at the beginning of the term, so I gave her like 7 weeks to learn the accompaniment and do it with me.
Well, it's beautiful. So let's go ahead and take a listen to Shannon playing the Dietze on a song called Oasis. This is Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. You just heard a piece called Oasis, played on a bamboo flute called Aditza by my guest today, Shannon Liu. Shannon, who wrote this song? Do you know the composer?
Yeah, so the composer is Mo Fan, and he wrote it in 1988. And as you can hear in the piece, it feels pretty contemporary, and it uses a lot of, like, tunes by minorities. I think the next piece that's going to get played is also very similar, in the sense that it's also played with minority folk tunes. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So it was from 1980. And how was this song chosen for this performance?
Yeah. So pretty much my teacher just gave me this piece, and he was like, I think this is going to be a good challenge. You should try this out. And I tried it. I really enjoy, like, the different tonalities of it, I think, because normally you have the whole note scale, and this one, it has a lot of challenges. It uses a lot of sharps and flats.
Wow.
Compared to other pieces, so you have to do a lot of half holes. You cover half of it. And just, it's also very technically challenging in all other aspects.
I mean, talk about having to have muscle memory to be able to go from covering the hole completely to half, to covering only half the holes. That's just amazing. What did I have down here? Dramatic, emotional, technically brilliant, effortless. Also, the effortlessness of your playing is wonderful. And folks, all those notes and everything she did was with six holes in this instrument. And so the combinations of your fingers must be countless, I guess I would say. Okay, so Shannon, let's talk about the future. You're a senior at Carleton. And so what are you thinking for your job and or for your musical life after you graduate?
Yeah, so in terms of my job, it is completely different from music. I am interested in human-computer interaction. So I'm really interested in how technology can help people in just everyday in their everyday lives. And I'm interested in doing things like user experience research, trying to figure out how to improve technology to fit people's needs, and also things like product management, where you would be basically managing the formation of a product. And so those are some things that I hope to try or do in my future. In terms of music, I really would like to continue playing music. I've talked to Galhom about this multiple times, where I was like, I should just stick around in Minnesota and then I can go perform with you whenever we're free. it would be really great to do that, because without her, I would not be the same musician I am today.
Yeah. Well, when I'm listening to this, I was thinking, okay, there can't be that many players of this instrument that are as proficient as you are, and that it just seems like it would be really, really great instrument to have on soundtracks, you know, of movies. There's mm-hmm. just something about it that really speaks to that. So who knows? Maybe. So, are there ensembles that you could join? Or could you just start your own?
Honestly, that would be really cool to be able to start my own. I think the Chinese music community, it's pretty scattered around the United States. I mentioned that we had, like, a Chinese youth orchestra, but many of them don't really go on to being professionals. So I think if I did continue performing Chinese music, it'd probably be something very similar to, like, Galhom's career path, collaborating with people of different cultures. She has a lot of ensembles where she works with people from, like, African cultures, Iranian cultures, and just doing a lot of improvisation, which is yeah. also something that came from, like, the Chinese freedom, like, free music.
Yeah. Okay, also, you don't have to play just Chinese music, and you don't have to play just with Chinese mm-hmm. instruments, right? You can marry this with anything. Yeah. And I think sometimes that's when some of the most interesting and innovative music comes from, when you take instruments from different cultures and join them up. I mean, you could mm-hmm. you could play in a rock band with this instrument. Really, seriously, you could. Why not? Listen to Hocus Pocus by Focus.
Yes.
and you'll see, you could cop that flute part, I bet, no problem. Well, good luck in your future endeavors, and I totally wholeheartedly support making the interaction between humans and computers a little bit more efficient, because I know we all bang our heads sometimes when we're trying to deal with our computers. So I want to talk about the quote that I picked out for this week now, and this is a quote by James Galway. And why don't you tell us a little bit about James Galway?
Yeah, so James Galway, pretty sure he's a French flutist. He's very proficient in the flute world. If you search up any famous pieces in flute, chances are there's a recording of him. And he's just very well revered in the flute community.
Yeah. And he said, you cannot prepare enough for anything. Which I kind of, after I read it, I just kind of went right by it because it seemed like so obvious. But really, I kind of kept coming back to it, because really it's profound in so many different ways. And so before I say anything more, tell me how it hits you, how you interpret this.
Yeah, I really love that quote. I think it's, for some people it might be stressful. I think to me it's very freeing, because it's like anything that's going to happen is going to happen. And so I can just focus on having the best performance myself. But if anything happens, I know it's not really my fault, as long as I prepare sufficiently enough. So to that extent, I think it's really great for performers just to understand that, like, anything can happen, and you just have to be okay with being flexible.
Nice. And so when you say practice, when you're practicing for something, a performance, let's say, when is enough for you?
So when I perform, I like to just find one thing that I want to improve every time I perform a piece.
Oh, nice.
And because if there's too many things, I'm going to get overwhelmed.
Right.
And I think it's really good to just focus on one thing. Normally, like, practicing enough is like having the piece down, and like you got everything memorized, and you can rely a little bit on muscle memory so you can focus on expression. I think
nice.
That's normally the point I try to get to before any performance. And then from there, I will focus on, like, I'm going to do more dynamics this time. I want to show more contrast. I want to get this section as beautiful as I can. Those are some things that I usually try to do in a performance.
I love the idea of rehearsing enough so that you're not concentrating on the notes, you're concentrating on the expression. That's beautiful, and I think that works for any performance of any instrument, right?
Yeah.
Because you can practice till you're blue in the face, and when you get to the performance, so many things are different, and probably most importantly, what's going on in your head at any moment is different. Your stresses are different and all that kind of thing. So you can never get it perfect, and being able to concentrate on the expression of it is what we all want to get to. I mm-hmm. think that's just really, really beautiful. Who's to say what's good enough? I mean, who's the arbiter of that?
I would say mainly yourself, just because you know the piece best normally when you're performing. Obviously, if your teacher's there, that's a little bit different.
Right.
I also get very nervous if my teacher is there for my performances. It trips me up a little bit. But I think overall, like, since you should be the one setting the goals for, like, how you want to convey your music, you should be the one making the decisions on if it was a good performance or not. And I think I was also very fortunate to have a very supportive community. So anytime I perform, everyone's just like, that is great. And so it's like when I do meet some criticism, I still know that, like, they are coming from a good place and they just want to help me improve. So that's how I like to go about it.
That's beautiful, Shannon. Thank you. That's really, really beautiful. So let's turn to the second piece called New Song of the Herdsman. And you said this is a song written by a minority community?
So it's a song written about a minority community. It's about the Inner Mongolians. Yeah, and so this piece is chosen to be something my teacher calls my 拿手曲子, which means just like a piece I can just pull out whenever I can. So he's been training me to do this piece since like probably like junior year of high school. This is one of the first pieces my new teacher had me play for him, and I've just been polishing this piece many times, and like I played it so many times that I don't know how many times I've played it.
So in practicing and lessons and in performances then, and so why did you choose this piece? I mean, other than it being something that you've been working on for so many years, what do you like about it, I guess I should ask?
Yeah, so I think this piece is kind of like one of the best examples of like descriptive music imagery. So in Chinese music, you get a lot of like names where it's like there's clouds and mountains and stuff like that. And this one is pretty unique because it's more of an active piece. It's descriptive as well as like active. So you have, you can hear the sound of horses galloping, and you can hear some folk tunes in it. And it just has everything in one package, I feel like.
Nice. And what was your biggest challenge with this piece?
This piece, the biggest challenge is the expression. So technically, it's not as difficult as the first piece that was played. But just being able to get the different feelings of like the beginning where it's a little bit more calm, and then like the middle where it's a lot of like you feel like there's a lot of horses and it's very exciting, and just like accelerating that excitement. Yeah. Those things are just there's a lot of little things that you want to focus on in like your tone and stuff like that. That's a little bit harder to manage.
Got it. And it is so expressive. It is very, and reflective both. And when was this recorded? And where?
So this was also recorded, around last June. So this was a recording for one of my music performance classes, and we basically had to choose like different camera angles and like different mics. So I had a very fun experience editing this video. It was also performed in Crackham Hall, but the method of recording is very different. It wasn't a live performance.
And so I should mention that you can see these performances on YouTube. And just look up your name, Shannon Liu, L-I-U. All right, so let's just take a listen to this now. And this is Shannon playing Dietze on the song called New Song of the Herdsman.
Thank you.
This is Musician Talk, and I'm your host, Pauline Jennings. My guest today is wind instrumentalist Shannon Liu. You just heard her solo on the Dietze on a piece called New Song of the Herdsman. Shannon, wow. Your parents must be so proud. You are something else. I mean, that just takes you on a journey, that song. You just took all of us on a journey, and a very exciting one. As well. Really, really incredible. So best gig, worst gig. You said you had some things for this, and then you kind of laughed. So yeah. I'm interested in what you have to tell us.
Yes. So my best gig was Oasis. So again, it's a very technically challenging piece. I was very happy with the way I did that double tongue circular breathing. So happy that I blinked out a little bit and then messed up. So I think it was really great. No one noticed. So it was also,
right.
Yeah, it's the best when no one notices that you mess up.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah. In terms of the worst gig, it's a happy coincidence that I also chose New Song of the Herdsman, because I had one of my worst performances was on that piece. And I think it shows a lot just like how much being able to practice and like perform over the years changes how you perform. So one of the first performances on this piece was in a middle school gymnasium with a bunch of kids and parents who were in the same program that I was in. So a lot of the students were, I was also helping with teaching them, and there was lots of middle schoolers, elementary schoolers just like watching me. And so while I was playing, I messed up, and then I blanked out for a full probably like 10, 15 seconds, which is a lot.
That's a long time
when
you're performing.
Yeah, that's a long time when you're performing. And so I just stood there and stared into a corner for a bit. And my teacher at that time, he saw the recording. He started laughing. I think it was a really great experience, and low stakes too, because it was just with some parents and some students. And I think that made me realize like how bad a performance can get. And
you still survived.
Yeah,
right?
Still survived. I think it was really great that I was able to learn it early on.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't get as much of the paralyzing fear anymore, because I just remember back to that performance. I'm like, it's never going to be that bad. I'm more prepared now, and I can do this.
That's great. And it is a great lesson to learn early on. I want to ask you about this contest that you won gold medal in 2021 in China. And it was a national bamboo flute competition, correct?
Yes.
Will you tell us a little bit about that? And I thought that was going to be your best gig. So, but I want to talk about it even though it wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, it was a whole kind of surreal experience because it was over the pandemic. So the format of the competition was pretty unique, where you kind of just recorded and you sent in the recording. But
okay.
Because I'm in America, the way I was submitting my application was kind of different, because I had to send it to my teacher, and then he was the one who submitted it for me.
Okay.
And then like a few months later, they were just like, yeah, you won.
Oh.
So I think that's part of why it's just like there wasn't any like live performance.
Right,
I did
right.
prepare a lot for it, but it just felt a little bit more disconnected. So
yeah.
I guess like it shows how much live performance is like really important to musicians.
It is. And I hope that you have that kind of opportunities. And I'm sure you will have those kind of opportunities on some really big stages, as you did at Carnegie Hall. And I would just like to, before we close up here, tell us a little bit about that and how that came about.
Yeah. So again, it was one of those things where I did a recording and submitted it. They were like, cool, you got it. And I just went on, I performed. I think I was also in high school. So at that time, I wasn't really putting that much stakes on being a musician. I never expected to be here.
Wow.
So I was just like, cool, this is a really great opportunity. A lot of people have played on Carnegie Hall, and they're all amazing. So I just wanted to be there.
And yes.
Yeah.
Wow, you got the opportunity to do that in high school. That's incredible. So before we close here, I want to talk a little bit about your gig on October 30th at 3 o'clock at Crackham Performance Hall at Carleton College. Tell us about the show.
Yeah, so this is a super unique program that is probably almost never done before in America. So we got the Chinese dance group. I think they're called CAMS, Theater Dance. And they do a lot of Chinese traditional dance. And so we're going to be playing live music while they dance next to us. And it's going to be a super unique experience. The dancers are beautiful.
I bet.
I just did a gig with them like last week. We did the same piece that we're going to perform at the Carlton performance called, the translation is Moonlight and Autumn, I think. Mm. We have a very talented Guzheng player, Helen Hu, and Silas Zhao is the erhu player, and then we're going to be playing a small chamber piece with Gao Hong, and I'm going to be playing on the xiao, which is a huge vertical flute.
And vertical means it comes out from your face as opposed to long.
It's like a clarinet.
Got it.
Yeah. So we're going to be playing that piece, and then I will also be playing a solo called The Little Herdsman, I guess. That's the translation. And okay. So I'll also be playing that with the dancers dancing next to me. And we also have like two or three more pieces by the ensemble where there's going to be dancing. So it's going to be a super interesting and unique experience for anyone who can come up.
And it's a Chinese music ensemble and also global music ensemble. Do you play together or do you have separate pieces and or both?
So we have separate pieces. Most of the time, people in the global ensemble are also in the Chinese ensemble.
Okay.
We have plenty of students who just want to learn about Chinese music and be exposed to the culture, and so they join. And we're always happy to have anyone, even beginners. And so in the global ensemble, I think this year we're going to be playing some Japanese folk tunes. So it's going to be a lot of... Asian music, which is super cool.
Well, this concert sounds wonderful. I'm really excited to go. I love marrying live music with dance. I don't think there's much more that you can. What am I trying to say? A much more immersive experience, I guess. So, thank you so much, Shannon, for being on the show and sharing your music with us. And I look forward to seeing you on the 30th.
Thank you so much.
Oh, wait a second. We don't need tickets, right?
No.
It's a free concert.
It's free. You can just walk in.
Awesome. There you go. All right. Thanks, Shannon.
Yep. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Many, many thanks to Shannon for this inspirational and fun conversation and for sharing her music with us today. Thanks always to Wendy Nordquist and to you, dear listener, for tuning in to Musician Talk on the One, KYMN. Have a glorious day.
You've just heard the 73rd edition of Musician Talk with your host, Pauline Jennings, and her guest today, Carlton student Shannon Liu. And we do look forward to hearing her in concert on October 30th at the Whites Center at Carleton College. I'm Wendy, and you're tuned to your local station, KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, 95.1 FM, AM 1080, and we are online at kymnradio.net. Last check of the weather on our way to another unusually, unseasonably warm day. We're at 68 right now under sunny skies. Winds are currently from the northwest, I believe. I don't have the direction here. 16 miles per hour. And earlier today, I read about a wind advisory that the National Weather Service has given. And that is from 7 this evening to 3 a.m. on Monday, south winds with gusts up to 46 miles per hour are expected in portions of east central, south central, and southeast Minnesota. And gusty winds could blow around unsecured objects. Tree limbs could be blown down, and a few power outages may result. And use extra caution when driving, especially if operating a high-profile vehicle, and be sure to secure those outdoor objects overnight tonight. And after our high today, which might be about 78, will drop to 67 overnight and a high tomorrow of 72 and partly sunny skies. Now we'll return to music here on KYMN, and I'll be heading out, but keep it tuned right here. So much music ahead, and I'll be back at 6 o'clock this evening with another edition of Fine Tune.